What is happening? Welcome back. My name is Yogi Roth, Life Without Limits podcast. And I'll tell you what, this thing just continues to feed my soul. I'm seeing life literally through a podcast. And today's guest has happened that way. It is completely random. And why not? Because that's what podcasts are all about. But literally, I get a message on Facebook from a friend named Mike Lynch, and he says, you'll love this article. It's about this woman traveling the world, writing, sketching, speaking, inspiring, really fascinating. I don't want to screw her name up because we've never met. We've never talked. We've emailed. She's in Norway right now. It's Candace Rose Rarden, I believe. So I'm going to bring in Candace because I think you can hear me right now. Are you there?
I'm here. Good morning. Hello.
Oh, yeah. Good morning is right. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing great. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. Literally, I started this podcast a couple weeks ago, and it was all based about finding people who were charging and going for it and living a life the way they want. And the analogy I utilize is, you know, imagine water kind of going down a river, and it bounces off rock after rock after rock, but I'm really intrigued by people who build a dam and send the water the other way. And I've tried to live a life like that. And clearly you have. And I can't wait to dive into your story. So first and foremost, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. And I love that metaphor too. I've often thought about those moments in life when I feel like there's been a boulder kind of plunked down onto my river and the course is suddenly redirected. I literally journaled about that a few times. So I love that you just said that. I totally believe that.
I love it. All right. So let's dive in. We're going to go through ideally your story, your path, but I want to set the stage for the listeners. How would you describe yourself like today? Like who is Candace, and am I pronouncing your name properly? And if I'm not, I apologize.
Yeah, absolutely. My last name is Rarden, and my mom has always said, think of it like a rare done steak, if that helps. But it's a strange one. So I answer to Rarden all the time. And in terms of describing myself today, I'm a writer, sketch artist, and illustrator. And I say I have a passion for telling stories about the world, whether it's with words or watercolors. So I love to travel. I love to be immersed in the world. And when I am, I'm often doing watercolor travel sketches. And then what I do is I put those sketches with my stories. And I love kind of bringing both elements, both the storytelling and the visual storytelling, when I'm creating those moments about the world.
So how does that happen? Were you like a writer as a child? Were you always the gal in art class who was crushing it? Or is this something new that you picked up?
You know, the writing and the art have kind of been there from the beginning. My dad was a trained artist, and my mom is incredibly creative and very nurturing of creativity. So from a very young age, I was into art and was also writing stories when I was 11 or 12 and sending them to my best friend, and was very creative growing up. But it kind of took me a while to figure out A, how to bring the two together, but also B, just how to pursue them as a livelihood. When I was in university, I did a lot of fiction writing workshops. And although I loved the idea of being a writer, I was terrible at fiction and I felt very out of place. And so I kind of set my writing aside and I didn't really consider pursuing it at all. Then right at the end of my college graduation, I had two friends who said, come to London with us. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to travel. And I was like, that sounds like a brilliant idea. Let's go to London. So I went to London for 6 months. And then at the end of that, I had met a lot of people in London from New Zealand. And I thought, New Zealand sounds great. Let's go to New Zealand. Applied for a year-long working holiday visa. And the reason I say all that is because between London and New Zealand, something struck me in the middle of the night, and I Googled masters in travel writing. I don't know where that came from. I had never heard of travel writing, but it just sort of pinged into my head. And it turned out the course existed and that it was back in London. And I thought, that sounds amazing. The course, they had described travel writing as this hybrid genre where you're using the techniques of fiction, but you're writing about real life experiences. And that for me really opened things up because I had sort of been hitting my head against a wall as a fiction writer. And I thought, hey, I'm having these incredible experiences in the world. I would love to get to write about those like I've always done about imaginary stories. And so from that point on, I was 22 when I discovered that I began pursuing travel writing. But then it was a few years after that that I started travel sketching. It was actually while I was studying for my master's back in London that I was doing, you know, short weekend trips around Europe like you do when you're based there. And it's amazing to kind of take advantage of how close all these countries are. And something, again, inspired me to start bringing a sketchbook and kind of revive that childhood love for art that I hadn't really done anything with for about 10 years. And as I did, I just kind of instantly loved it. I loved the idea of sketching and who it made me into as a traveler. I paid so much more attention and I was observing and my senses were wide open. And so that's kind of when that started about 5 years ago was when I started sketching. And it was about a year after that that I began to bring the writing and art together. So a bit of my story.
Wow. All right. So I got 1,000 questions based on that.
Yeah,
but
I'm so intrigued.
I mean, this one was a really interesting one to prepare for, right? Like I've done about 6 or 7 of these episodes so far, and the people either I've come across their art and been able to really dive into them. For you, you know, you can find some stuff online about you. Obviously, you've got an incredible site that we will make sure that we continue to plug for sure throughout this entire podcast. But I didn't want to do too much research. You know, this whole thing is based around being really curious. And where I really leaned into you was something I read about where you grew up in Virginia and you never traveled outside of the USA as a kid. And I'm the same way. Like we just didn't have the means to go do it, but I'm obsessed with exploring as well. So how did you get in touch with that side of yourself when you look back and reflect? I mean, obviously the trip to London did a lot, but prior to that, were you looking at globes? Were you reading things? I mean, what was it about your life as a child?
I love that you said the globe thing because that was totally it's amazing now to look back and to kind of see it all click into place. So after I started traveling, my mom came across a picture of me when I was literally about 3 or 4 years old and I'm putting together a puzzle of a world map. And she was like, oh, I shouldn't have given you that map. This is how it's all gotten started. And then there's another one of me at about 12 and I'm leaning on this huge round cushion we had that was covered with the print of a globe. And so it's amazing now after the fact to look back and kind of see these little moments that you're like, oh, I wonder if that was a seed where something was planted. And I do think there was always this seed of wanderlust inside me, just kind of inexplicably. There were things like my mother's brother, my uncle, was stationed in Japan twice in the Navy. And when I was about 11 or 12, I was pen pals with my aunt, and she would write me from the other side of the globe. And I remember just looking forward to those letters so much and kind of feeling my awareness of the world awakened, that there was this whole other, you know, place that my family was living that I wanted to get to know, this other culture. And she would send back little trinkets, or that was when the Olympics were there. And I remember just being fascinated by that. And so I think it is funny now to look back and kind of connect the dots and see that there was kind of this very, you know, unspoken awareness of the world. And really by the time I was in high school, I knew that I wanted to get out and explore. And I did have a chance when I was in my junior and senior year of high school. I did go on 2 short trips to the Dominican Republic that were service trips. We were working in orphanages and, you know, painting and playing with the kids. And on both of those trips, I was done for. It's kind of like, you knew, like I fell hard at first sight for the world. And reading my journals from those trips now, I'm like, this is it. I love this. I love, you know, I had my little camera and I was like, I love just taking pictures of this new country and this new culture, and it's so different. And so really that was kind of the culmination of a childhood dream of getting to travel. But then all through college, I didn't really have the chance to. I didn't have really the means to travel internationally growing up. And again, in college, you know, you have to watch your pennies, and study abroad programs were not cheap at all. And I would look at a program for Ireland that would be several thousand dollars for a 2-week course. And I thought, gosh, that just seems, you know, a little bit outrageous, and just nothing really felt right or kind of made themselves happen. So it really took that invitation from my 2 friends, because they were going to London just to work. And that to me sounded ideal, because we could get work visas, we could get jobs, I could, you know, support myself while still getting the chance to travel for the first time truly and immersed in the world. So that, you know, I kind of joke that I'm totally my father's frugal daughter. So getting that awareness of these work visas, I'm always very clear to say that's how I got my start, because you know, I didn't have this inexhaustible fund of money to go travel with. I was very much, you know, especially when I was in New Zealand, I was working any odd job I could find. I did 4 months as a checkout chick in a supermarket, just standing there swiping people's groceries and packing bags, and I bartended, and it was really just anything I could find to keep me out in the world. And so that I love to kind of share, because I'm really passionate about making people realize how accessible travel can be. You don't have to spend several years saving up this huge, you know, this huge fund. Yeah, I was excited just to get out in the world and just have a normal life, but in a different country.
You know, it's so funny you say that. My very first trip was right around that same age. I went to Australia, and I worked at an internet cafe, like literally teaching people how to create Hotmail accounts. You know, like it was at this mall in Australia, and whatever I could do. Yeah, so I'm curious about
you. Make it work.
Yeah, of course. So the first episode of this entire podcast, I interviewed my mom, and I asked her about that flame, you know, like that just kept growing to go explore. And she's like, of course I saw it. You know, like parents see things that clearly children have no idea. When you talk to your folks, not knowing that relationship, do they reference that at all? Whether you were always climbing trees or just seeking to go explore?
Oh my gosh. Yes. There's actually like, it's kind of become a family legend now where we were on, it was the one big vacation we did growing up where we went over to the West Coast. We got to fly for the first time, and we went to California, and we rented a car, started in San Diego and drove up to San Francisco. And on one of our last days of the trip, we went hiking in John Muir Woods, just north of San Francisco. And apparently there was, I you know, vaguely remember this. I think now my memories are largely rooted in legend, but I guess we're walking on this trail through John Muir Woods, and I just said, can I please go off the path? I really want to just hike in the woods. I don't want to stay on this path. And my parents, of course, are like, honey, we're in a national park. You can't do that. You've got to stick to this trail. But my mom references that moment so often, just me begging to explore and get off this set path that's been laid out for me, because that was just totally what went on to happen in life as well. That, you know, when I was in college, I could sense the path that kind of general society he laid out for me. Certainly there's more than one way to do life, but in my conservative upbringing, I felt like the path that I could follow was you go to college and then you get a job and then you, you know, either get married or you get a house. Like you kind of have this very, you know, nice and ordered set of steps that you should follow in life. And I just didn't feel comfortable with that right away. I just felt that same longing inside me as I did when I was 12 or 13 to, gosh, I want to get off the path. I want to explore a little bit before I keep following this. And that's so, yeah, I think once you have some, you've kind of gone down the path a little bit, I love to look back with hindsight and kind of see how it all clicks together and see those moments where the flame was totally still there.
How hard is it to hang on to that desire to get off the path? Because look, we all, I think, and a lot of these listeners will be saying, look, I want to get off the path too, but I'm scared or I can't. And we both know that can clearly, that word should just be, you know, should just disappear. But what do you say? And what's your experience with that? Cause I'm sure you felt that at times of, man, like I thought maybe I'd be married by now or I'd have more money by now. And when you do have those feelings, how do you deal with them?
Oh, I feel them all the time and they never go away, I don't think. Just hearing you ask that, I was like, just all these memories came back. And absolutely, I think before every big trip and every low moment in my work cycle, when I don't have a lot of work coming in, I'm like, gosh, it would be great to not have to keep digging this path, you know, and just feel like I've got everything in place. There's a ton of uncertainty involved in living a life off the path, whether you're traveling, whether you're pursuing a creative vocation that's a little uncertain, whether you're just doing something a little bit different. And all I want to do sometimes is just go get in bed and curl under my covers and just make it all go away. Like, honestly, I want to watch New Girl on TV and, you know, just ignore it. What I've tried to do, and I say try because this is still something I deal with and I've realized it's just always going to be a part of my journey, is when those moments come, I just kind of let them be. I'm like, okay, this is cool. Here's the doubt. It's coming back. Here's the need to just run for safety. And I just kind of embrace it because I know that that means I'm on a journey. journeys shouldn't be all sunshine and rainbows. They should have some moments where you feel a little lost and you feel like you just want to throw your backpack down and call the whole thing off. And so when those moments do come, I just let them, I kind of acknowledge them. I find that naming is a very powerful thing. And so I just sort of name the emotion of wishing that it all would just fall into place already and that I would have all the answers I want. And then I kind of have two approaches. I either do just take a day off and like go to the beach or just go hang out with my friends and just let the doubt pass over me, or I plunge into it and I might like take a night to journal and really ask myself some hard questions if I feel like that's what needs to happen, if I really need to dig deep and search my soul for why I'm feeling that doubt right then. So I would say that if you are feeling it, just to kind of welcome it as a part of your journey, because I'm a huge believer that our emotional journeys mirror our physical journeys, and the treks and the pilgrimages I've done around the world, they have their hard moments. They have their moments where you just want it all to be over with. And so whenever that happens in life now, emotionally, I'm like, okay, I can do this. I've done this before.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with like TikTok Khan or the Art of Mindfulness, but you're preaching literally one of the chapters of his book of, you know, A, staying connected to the moment and competing to do it and dealing with the emotions when they arise. And I'm curious about your journals. I'm a journaler as well. And the reason I write journals is because when I was a kid, somebody totally just crushed my dreams. And I was like, man, the only person I could talk to is like this journal, because like, it's the only way I could express myself, you know, and then that's a little soft story, but I really still feel that way. It's like they're a companion on the road. How do you view that? And when you do write in those things, how far do you go? And in your work, are you willing to share that?
I love that you're asking this, and I'm realizing, yeah, I have mentioned them a few times in this conversation so far. And I think it might be because I have recently gotten back into doing art journaling, which I did a lot when I was growing up and then didn't do for, you know, however many years when I was in high school and college. And I've just started doing it again, where I have this blank, you know, journal sketchbook, and I do a lot of traditional journaling. I'm just writing down thoughts and doubts and frustrating moments. But I also have fun with lettering, you know, and just kind of like recently I was kind of struggling with this idea of these opportunities were coming to me that I'm like, are these good opportunities or do I need to wait for the great opportunities? And my mom kind of said this thing about, well, you know, good wears many disguises, you know, it can come at you. And so when I was journaling that night, I did a whole, you know, kind of art display of good wears many disguises, and just kind of, for me, it's really just reflection. And as someone who loves to be creative, it's also expression. It's a way to kind of bring it all together and put it down on the page in a new way. And I love that you said yours are a companion, because the journal I have with me right now on this trip that I'm doing lots of collages in and doing lots of lettering and different art techniques along with the traditional journaling, it is totally my travel companion on this journey in Norway. I love to go to it several times a week and just kind of put down what's happening on the journey. So, and I think as well, if you're pursuing a kind of career as a writer or as someone who's sort of involved in creative expression for a living, it's really nice to have a place that's not for immediate public consumption. It's not a blog. It's not an article. It's a place where you just get to be you and sort of let your thoughts ruminate for the first time before you then go the next step and try to put them together in something that's going to be shared more widely. I think it's really important to have those sacred places for yourself that you can sort of process what's happening and express yourself without feeling like you have to go put on Instagram the next moment.
Well played. I hope everyone takes that note. I'm sure you get this a lot. And I hear from a lot of my female friends about this. You know, I'm traveling around like, man, I just can't go do that. I can't go to India by myself. I can't go to, you know, Cambodia or wherever it may have been. For you, what do you deal with as a woman, you know, an attractive Caucasian woman, when you drop into these other countries? What do you sense and how do you process it? And do, if you have fears, how do you work through those?
Absolutely. I think that's a huge concern. And I often say the tricky thing about traveling alone as a woman is that there's so many layers of concern. There's so many different things that could happen. And the awareness of that never really goes away. you always kind of have it at the back of your head when you're walking through Delhi for the first time or in Siem Reap in Cambodia. You're just kind of always thinking, okay, this could happen, this could happen. It's like constantly like risk management, right? Here's what I found though, especially in Asia, since you mentioned India and Cambodia, it's very unusual for a woman there, a woman from India, to go traveling on her own. And so when, I'll use the train as an example, because I did a lot of sleeper class journeys in India. And when the families there see a young woman on their own, that's so unusual for them that they just immediately reach out. And I say that I've been adopted by so many Indian families on the train, because every time I would get on, they would just sort of see me and we would immediately start talking. There's really so few barriers to connection in India that they would immediately start talking, share their food, make sure I was okay. Did I know which stop I was getting off? You know, make sure your bag is up. Are you safe? Are you sleeping well? Like, for me, it's being on my own in those countries is actually a way to connect with people. I always feel just so looked out for when I'm there. I really do feel actually taken care of a little bit more because I'm on my own. There have definitely been, you know, some shady moments, but largely it's gone okay. I think people have reached out in good ways and in positive ways more than they ever have in negative ways. So I just, again, like we were talking earlier about risk, it's like just kind of taking that risk with me and that awareness and saying I could not do this trip because I'm a woman on my own, or I could do it and I could see what happens. And largely what has happened is that it's opened doors for me. So I am a huge fan of it.
Nice. Are you a fan of Paulo Coelho, the author?
Absolutely.
Cool. So I love that. So he's my favorite author, and anybody who knows me at all knows that The Alchemist is literally my Bible that I read every year and learn something completely new from. And literally, I think Santiago is like my buddy. But you'll love it. One of the previous guests, a guy named Kevin Carroll on this podcast, calls me Santi Yogi, and it's his That's favorite really book cute. As well. You'll love him. But my favorite part of that book is that there's this language of the world they talk about, and I believe that of going into war-torn countries in the Middle East or in Africa, and you learn that, and I'm curious about your thought on this, but I believe that everything is taught and learned. You know, you don't come out of the womb hating Jews, hating Palestinians, you know, whatever the demographic may be, it's something that's taught and learned. And there's this language of the world, and it's not French or Spanish or English, it's love. And you've been in some gnarly places. I've read about how you stayed with Muslim families, you know, in, you know, countries that some people might be afraid to go in. Have you found that love is the language of the world?
Absolutely. So, yes, I think it's the language of love, but also of kindness. As I mentioned before, I have done a couple of pilgrimages around the world. One in Japan, that was a Buddhist pilgrimage for 8 days. And then the trek you mentioned in Turkey, that was for 22 days. And in both situations, I was floored by how quick they were to just make sure I was okay and to make sure that I had everything I needed. Turkey, I had a tent, I had a sleeping bag. I was to take care of myself that way. And I would get to a village each night and ask where I could pitch my tent. And they would say, no, 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 you come and stay with us. You know, one of the first words that I learned in Turkish was mesafir, which means guest, because they would just say, no, mesafir, mesafir, space for me at their dinner table and put a sheet on their couch or put me in a bed. And those were huge formational experiences for me because, you know, and I'll be careful how I say this, but especially with the Muslim families, I think back now in the U.S., there can be some very heated language about that faith and about their intentions. And it's very difficult for me now to listen to that because both in Turkey and also I spent 10 days in Bosnia once and had the same exact experience there where these families were some of the kindest I have ever seen around the world. And most loving and most interested and were so happy to have me there and so happy to share their culture that it's so difficult now to see the very extreme examples of that faith kind of color the entire faith in general, because I do believe around the world that we're all fueled by a desire to want to help people. I don't think the majority of people are out to hurt each other. I think they really are everybody wants the same thing for their families. They all want their children to be fed, to be educated, to be safe. And I think that if we could just focus on those common desires a little bit more, that the world would be an incredibly different place.
Is that a reason why you do post in your blog at CandiceRoseRaritan.com and you do share your art to try to influence culture a little bit, or is it purely about expression?
No, culture is at the heartbeat of what I do. I have a little diagram on my website that talks about its culture, its community, its culture, creativity, and connection. For me, art is a way to connect with other cultures, and it's a way to express these differences. I hope to show, only to say, look how much alike we all are. Here's how we're different, and here's how we're alike. And I repeatedly talk about this trip in Turkey because it's been a couple years now, but I am so passionate about what that trip showed me about this other culture and this other faith that I think it's very easy to hold it to arm's length and to try to understand it from our distance and say, oh no, I know what that's about and I don't agree with it. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. These people were the kindest people I've ever met. They did incredible things for me when I was alone in their country, walking through the woods, completely lost all the time. I would emerge and I would see a house and I would knock on its door and those people would welcome me in. They would dry my raincoat. They would carry my backpack for me. Like, I was so humbled by the kindness I experienced on that trip. And for me, that's what I really am forever trying to convey that through my stories and through my sketches, just to the sketches, I think, are a way to say, look, isn't this beautiful? Like, isn't this other culture have so much to be appreciated about it? And the stories, I'm constantly just trying to share moments of connection with these cultures that are vastly different from our own. But I think that my heartbeat as a writer and an artist and someone wanting to tell stories about the world is to say, but look how much we can connect, even if we're vastly different from each other. There's a foundation of respect and kindness that we can build a connection on.
How does it go when you send an email home and you're like, hey, mom and dad, I'm going to go to Turkey for 22 days or Bosnia for 10 days. How's that one, let alone, I'm sure, your community of friends?
You know, my parents are remarkably supportive. They really, every step of the way, I think the only time they ever balked a little bit was when I was moving to New Zealand, because I had still only been traveling for a few months by that point, and New Zealand was so far from home that my dad just sort of laughed when I said on Skype, yeah, I'm going to move to New Zealand next. He's like, huh, sure you are. I was like, no, I'm serious. And I think that by doing that, that was the furthest I could go from home. And so I think the thing now is, like, no matter where I go, it's not New Zealand. It's a little bit closer than New Zealand, so it must be good. And with the more, you know, potentially risky situations, like doing a trip with a rickshaw in India or doing this trek in Turkey, my parents just, I don't know, they don't say a whole lot in terms of, oh, you shouldn't do that. They've never once told me you shouldn't take that trip. They tell me to be wise. They tell me to take precautions, you know, be on my guard. But I think they trust me and they trust that I'm on the right path. And my mom often says, not to get morbid, but if something were to happen and were my life to end, she has said several times throughout the years, you will have lived more in your years than many people do in their whole life. You have, you know, I really have tried to make the most of these last few years of my life, and I feel very grateful with that. And so I think my mom just sort of, yeah, celebrates that and realizes that I shouldn't stop taking risks. Yeah.
Wow. I love that. How about this one for you? When you're on the road, right, whether you're on a 22-day trip, which for someone in Virginia or California would be like, whoa, that is gnarly. I can't believe you took that much time off, or even like 3 months. And then I've always loved like dropping into a hostel and kind of saying that with my chest out. And then somebody being like, yo, dude, I've been on the road for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Have you found that of like, wow, like our crazy travel potential expeditions are actually kind of chump change compared to some people around the country?
Well, here's a hilarious example is that one of my favorite writer and adventurers, Alistair Humphreys, he just had a book come out called Grand Adventures. And I'm very honored that I got to be included in it as an example of having done the rickshaw run in India, where I drove a little auto rickshaw about 2,000 miles across the country. And I'm honored to be included in this book, but it is a reality check that there are people out there doing it. There are people who have cycled around the world, kayaked around the world, hiked around whales with a donkey, like these crazy examples where I'm like, you know what? I can never call myself an adventurer again after these stories. It's just me. There's people who have cycled across Antarctica. I mean, it's ridiculous. So it is totally a reality check. I learned very quickly as a traveler that there's always going to be someone who's journeyed longer, farther, wider, harder, you name it.
Right.
To me, that's exciting because it's like, look how far you can go in this lifestyle. And in a way, it also is a check. It kind of lets me know, like, do I envy that person? Like, especially when I was first starting out, it's like, do I want to be gone from home that much? You know, there was someone who had been traveling for 4 years and hadn't gone home in that time. And I was like, no, I don't want that. Like, I think it's good to kind of meet people who have experiences that are kind of beyond yours, because it's both inspiration and it can also be a way to kind of bring your own desires into question.
It's a really cool point of how our potential is boundless and endless. You know, as a guy who was on this conversation a little while ago, Kevin Carroll, has been telling me that for years. And you just get to see it when you do get out of your quote unquote comfort zone. Wondering, have you ever seen the documentary called Jim, the James Foley story?
No, I haven't, but I will look it up.
Yeah, you got to look it up. And the reason I bring it, not to go dark for a second, but I want to follow up on what you and your mom talked about. And I watched this documentary, and James Foley is a ridiculously accomplished journalist who was captured overseas and beheaded in front of the world. And when I watched this film, it was the first time that I really like connected to the spirit of another traveler in a cinematic experience. You know, the first time I ever did it was watching Motorcycle Diaries. I didn't know anything about Che Guevara, nothing about Communist Revolution. I just saw a guy on a motorcycle bail medical school and go see the world and get totally emotionally connected to it. And when I watched the film Jim, I said the same thing. And I think your mom is right on. And I feel the same way of, you know, you live life to live with experiences, right? And to continue to grow and ideally share and pass things on. And whether that's through a smile and a handshake or what's through a sketchbook or a documentary. And that I think is something that we all innately feel like we all want to pass something on, no matter the profession, but sometimes we lose that. I've read, you know, the article I read about you in Nat Geo, I was really impressed with the comments below it. And it seemed like your piece, just similarly to the James Foley film or the book you were just in, seems like there are these subtle nudges to people of like, come on, you can go. And I hope this podcast is that as well. How have you found your subtle nudge be received by people around the globe?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned those comments, because what was exciting for me to see was so many of the people were still in university and like, I totally want to do this when I graduate. And I don't know how to make it happen. And that's why I mentioned the thing about the work visas earlier, that I'm just so quick to talk about that with people, because it's, for me, it's not even a subtle nudge. I'm like, you can do this, because if I could do it, you could do it. You know, I came from a family where we did not travel internationally. I didn't know how to do this at all. I'd never heard of the idea of backpacking when I was growing up. I didn't know what a hostel was and didn't have, you know, I had maybe $4,000 in the bank when I went to London, which was the requirement from the UK government to have as a safety net to get set up there. So, I mean, you can't really get much lower than that in terms of, you know, I think people think they need to save and save for years. And like, I had $4,000 and made it work. So I love just kind of, I think that nudge is so important, because when I think about people, when I look at those comments and I think that's me, you know, 8 years ago, not knowing how to do this, but knowing that I want to be changed by the world. And so I love to, recognize that in people. Any chance, like whether it's in a comment or just a few weeks ago, I met a 19-year-old French girl who wants to have a life of travel. And sitting down with her and telling her my story, it felt like talking to myself 8 years ago. It was this incredible kind of full circle moment of being like, you can do this. You can totally create the life you want for yourself. To me, it's remarkable. And I think that's kind of what our journey is all about, that we're meant to get to a point where we then turn around and we start sharing it with people who are coming behind.
The Great Affair You know, what is that? It's an incredible phrase. You know, there's this killer show right now in the U.S. called The Affair, which is about the affair that one might think of initially when they hear that phrase. Husband, wife, an affair, cheating, etc. But is the name of your blog. It's called The Great Affair. Why is that?
It comes from a quote by Robert Louis Stevenson. And he says, "I travel not to go anywhere, but to go." There's a middle line. I'm totally forgetting at the moment. I'm sorry. Anyway, "I travel not to go anywhere, but to go. The great affair is to move." And I first came across that quote when I was a senior in college. I was on a little trip to Chicago with my parents, and we were in the Art Institute of Chicago's bookshop. And I saw this quote on a magnet. And as I mentioned to you before, I hadn't really traveled up until that point, but something about it still totally spoke to me. I just thought, that's it. It's the great affair is to move. It's just to be in the world. It's just to be seeing new places, experiencing new cultures. It's the movement. I just, you know, even at 21, having not really traveled, I could just picture being on a bus in foreign countryside or being on a ferry or a train. And that was sort of the initial spirit behind the name of my blog, was just this passion for movement and exploration and discovery. And I have a line on my blog's about page now, though, where I do feel as though I've kind of taken that to the next level, where I think our lives should be a great affair, that we should always be writing a story for ourselves that we love telling. And the great affair is to live and to keep moving through life and to never feel ourselves get stuck in one place or to get stuck in a rut, that we should, even if we're physically in one place, our minds can still move and we can still be growing and exploring new territory in our hearts and our souls. So that's sort of that's the story behind the name.
You need to meet my dad. I'm telling you, we just walked to the Camino de Santiago in Spain and Portugal, and we did a doc on it. And his line that everybody leaned into was, "Man is made to move." And it's so true. I mean, that whether it's literally moving one step after the other, or moving through something, moving through an issue, moving through a relationship, moving through a sketch, moving through a film. And it is very easy to get stagnant, and not just in the U.S. I think it's sometimes almost like a cop-out to say, everybody in the U.S. is just so focused and hyper-focused. But you go to other cultures and they haven't left their village in the Tuscan region, and they've stayed wherever they are in whatever country. And you've been to 50 countries around the globe. When you meet someone that is stuck, and maybe they're not 19, maybe they're 45 and they just got divorced or lost everything, as someone who isn't maybe as old as someone like that, but you're also not 22 coming out of UVA anymore, what do you say to them when that comes up?
That's a really good question. I don't think it's ever too late to move, that you can always make changes and make shifts. It's funny you said 45. I was just talking to a woman about that age last week who is definitely not stuck, but she had said she was for a little while, because actually the reason we connected was because she went to India when she was 22 for 9 months, like I did, and had a very profound experience there. And she said it shook her up so much that she's Norwegian, so she came back to Norway and said she tidied her life up, was the phrase she used. And she got married and she had two daughters and she had the life that society, you know, dictates we have. And it was only after a number of years that she shook things up. She said she's with a different partner now and she's gotten back into her art, and India is coming back through her art. So for me, that she was a beautiful example of kind of that self reincarnation that we can have no matter what age we're at, no matter what we've been through, how much we've set up for ourselves, that it's always, the change is never too far out of reach, I don't believe. I do believe that we're creatures who hate change, but we are designed for change as well. So that was what I would say to someone who was just kind of in a season of feeling a little bit stuck into one place, whether it's physically or emotionally. I do think it's never too late to shake things up and to create a new path for yourself.
Yeah, co-sign on all that. You know, on your site, which will be linked in this blog post, you give four lessons to kind of exploring. And I want to dive into the third one. You say live every day with an open heart.
Yeah.
How hard is that? And especially if you get it broken.
Yeah. For me, the open heart is incredibly difficult, because what I was writing about in that lesson was, for me, this whole story that you're referencing was about how to bring everything I loved about being a traveler, how do I then bring that into a more stationary, more everyday existence? You know, I recently settled in San Francisco and I'm creating a life that's just a little bit more traditional. So, you know, I have weekly commitments and I have places to be and I have a to-do list, and there's kind of this general hubbub that you kind of have when you're in one place and you're belonging to a community. You know, you have places to be and things to do and people to see. And I kind of took a pause after about 6 months of this new life in San Francisco. And I thought, what is it about being out in the world that I love about myself, that I love that the world makes me into? And how can I bring those home? You know, and also, who am I today because of traveling? You know, what are the key things about my personality, about my character, that have happened because I was in the crucible of the world for so long? And the lesson that you mentioned, live every day with an open heart, where I was coming from was that this openness to connection, this openness to the people around you, when you're just moving through your everyday life. So when I'm going to a coffee shop to get some new shipping materials for our work, and I'm at the checkout, and it is so easy to just breeze through that very quotidien experience and just say, yep, thank you, I'll pay with card, thank you, don't need the bag, okay, goodbye, you know, and not engage and not be open. Whereas when I'm traveling, every person is ripe for connection. I have an epiphany with the person at the supermarket because I am alive and I'm, hello, how are you? You know, you can feel yourself more alive. And so when you greet someone with aliveness, that often kind of makes way for a connection. You know, they get a little bit more engaging and you end up having these really wonderful experiences and exchanges. And so what I'll try to do now at home in San Francisco is, like, when I'm in that coffee shop, I remember once I was in Staples and I got up to the cash register and I was like, okay, come on, Candace, try to engage a little bit. Let's put the traveling hat on. And I'll never forget the guy, we were just kind of bantering and I was paying with my debit card. And I was like, gosh, in California, there's so many questions you've got to answer when you're trying to pay with card, you know, this and that. And he's like, yeah, before you know it, they're going to be asking you what your hat size is. And I just thought that hilarious little line he probably wouldn't have said if I hadn't tried to engage him a little bit, and I'll never forget that little line. But then there's also more meaningful examples as well. Like in the story you mentioned, I got to meet this lovely guy from Taiwan in my laundromat of all places. But I probably wouldn't have engaged him if I was just doing my everyday closed heart thing. But when he came in, I just thought, you know, if you were on the other side of the world right now, you would ask him a question, you would ask his name. And I just kind of, I love that you asked, is it hard? Because for me, it's absolutely a decision at every step of the way, because the easy thing to do is, and it's not like we purposely close ourselves off, right? You know, we're just doing our thing and we have stuff to do, but I think it just takes a little bit more energy. But the beautiful thing about that is that energy then, I do believe, comes back to us in the form of these encounters and these exchanges, that as soon as that happens, like when I had that conversation in the laundromat and I got to know this lovely guy who was in his 30s and he had grown up with his grandmother. And so he'd always wanted to travel, but it was only after she passed away that he felt he was able to leave Taiwan. And so he came to San Francisco and was studying English, and we had this fascinating conversation, and I left with far more energy than it had taken to try to start that conversation. So it's kind of like you put a little bit of, you know, investment and the reward is huge, basically, in terms of inspiration and connection. So all that to say, for me, it's definitely hard to live with an open heart because sometimes you just want to go about your day. But I love kind of holding on to that openness that I feel when I'm traveling, where every person is a potential new friend and every conversation has potential to be inspiring, and trying to hold on to that in my more everyday life now.
No doubt. I mean, I think we all travel to a degree, like it's before midnight with like Ethan Hawke and we're going to just bump into somebody on the train, right? And I can remember even last summer, yeah, I was bouncing around Spain for a while, and you know, of course, you say hi to everyone, just like you referenced. And I came home to Venice Beach, to Whole Foods, which is like the epicenter of like health, creativity, and beauty. And I walked in and I was charging, man. I'm like, all right, here we go. I'm going to make some new friends. I just came out of the countryside in Spain, and everybody had earbuds in or was focused on a phone. And I found that, as you referenced, that daily challenge of, okay, Yogi, get uncomfortable, get outside your comfort zone, say hi, ask a follow-up. And that is a daily challenge, no doubt.
Yeah, I think that you just made a great point about the earphones and or the earplugs and headphones, because that for me is also a challenge. Like when I'm on the train or on a ferry, I can catch it becoming a reflex for me now, which I didn't have a smartphone for so many years. And I do have one now back in the US, and it is a reflex. And that is part of being a little bit closed off to our environment. So I just try to keep it away now. Like if I'm on the bus or if I'm at dinner with friends, like just keep the phone away a little bit, because it does kind of rob you from that openness. I was even reading a study that showed something about, like, let's say you're at a dinner party with a few friends, and if anyone keeps their phone on the table while you're talking, like you'll be less likely to talk about something more deep, because people can see your phone's there and that your attention's probably going to be diverted. So they're not going to get into anything too serious or deep. And I find that fascinating, because I'm all about the deep, and I'm all about kind of connection and openness. So yeah, I love that you brought that thing up about the phones, because I do think that's one danger in our everyday life now. And that is certainly one way to stay a little bit more closed off from the world around us.
Love it. All right. Last couple, we'll let you go. I know it's the morning over there in Norway, but sketching. I read that you got going in Portugal. Love to know where. Okay. And then of course, you know, people are going to look at your website, and the first thing I did, Machu Picchu was my first trip after Australia. And I was like, oh my God, like that's killer. How did she do that? So how do you sketch? Like, what is literally the process? And then of course I need that story from Portugal, wherever that started.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. You said you were in Portugal last year. I was in Porto actually when that happened. Not sure if your journey led you there.
Yes. Too funny.
Awesome. Yeah, it was, again, like I mentioned, when I was studying for my master's, I was a huge fan of Ryanair in those days when you could still get flights for, I think it was about £20. I would return. I would go to Croatia, or I'd go to Portugal or Sardinia in Italy. Is the funny thing about living in England for 2 years, and I've never been to Wales or Scotland, but I have been all over Europe because of Ryanair. So I had booked this little trip to Portugal, had no idea what to expect. But as I mentioned earlier, something in me was like, I wonder if I should like sketch on this trip. I haven't drawn in 10 years. I had gone home to the US for Christmas, and I had mentioned this briefly to my mother. And so for Christmas, she gave me a set of watercolor pencils. And then I went to a craft store in our hometown, and I bought this big, like 9-inch by 12-inch, very thick sketchbook. And I brought both of those things with me to Portugal and didn't know what I was doing. I had never sketched on location before, but I thought, let's just give it a shot. And so the first time I was in a little glass-walled restaurant right on the river that flows through Porto. And then I got a little bit braver, and I would just sit right on the riverbank, or I'd go to a park on a Sunday morning and just sit on a park bench and sketch. And like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't research at all how to sketch on location. I just sat down with a pen and with these watercolor pencils that are very simple to use. You just kind of, you know, color with the pencil, and then you have a paintbrush and water, and it miraculously turns into paint a little bit and gives the effect is that it's been painted, but you just used a pencil. So they're very, very beginner friendly. And so I think I probably did maybe 5 or 6 sketches on that little weekend trip to Porto. But what happened was that people sometimes ask me, did you feel the effects of sketching immediately, or did it kind of take you a while to fall in love with it? And I'm like, no, it was definitely, you know, love at first sight for me with sketching. There's an entry from my journal from that sketchbook in Porto where I said, you know, I grew up with an SLR camera, so I'm very familiar with the world of how cameras work. So you have the aperture, which is the opening of it. That's how much the light gets let into the camera and exposes the film. And I wrote on the riverside in Porto that first trip that I feel like the camera, and that my mind is the aperture and it's wide open, that everything about this city is just pouring in right now, because as someone who loves to take pictures, I love photography. When I was traveling before with just my camera, I was running all over the place trying to capture everything. And so I would end up leaving, remembering nothing. And that for me was one of the first things with sketching, was it was just a tool for memory. I just wanted to start remembering my trips and have some vivid sensory observations to take with me. And so I remember that was in Porto. I just remembered my senses feeling so open, and like every sense, that whether it was listening or feeling or touching, was kind of on high alert. And then the other thing, and I love that you mentioned mindfulness earlier, because I'd never really thought about the idea of being present before. I didn't really know what that was as a phrase and as a emotion, but sketching is my tool for presence. It's my tool to be here now, is through my sketchbook. When I'm sketching, I feel no desire at all to go anywhere else. It's kind of like how Pico Iyer writes in his book, The Art of Stillness. He says, heaven is the place where you think of nowhere else. And that's what happens when I sketch, is that I am completely alive, aware, and content in each moment. Each moment is sacred, and I get to be in that moment through the lens of my sketchbook. And then you asked process, is that right? Just how it,
yes.
how it all works?
Yeah.
So I talk about the process. It's mainly three steps, and they sort of mirror the way that I'm engaging with a new place. So I always start with pencil, with just a straight up drawing pencil, because I don't trust my eye, and I want to give my eye a chance to get to know the scene and to make mistakes. So if I started drawing just with pen, it would not turn out well. So I give myself at least 15 minutes, sometimes even half an hour if it's a more complex scene, to draw with pencil and just to lay out the scene on the page, not having to worry about it needing to be totally accurate. And then, so that's the first stage. It's sort of like when you're taking a new place in, right? And you're just sort of looking, okay, how does this roof line connect with that building? What is that window doing? Where is the ruins of Machu Picchu in relation to the mountaintop? That sort of thing. And then the next stage is pen. Everyone has their own sketching style. So some people just do watercolors. I like to draw with pen first, with a waterproof pen, so that the paint doesn't mess it up. But I like to have that layer of the scene being drawn in, because for me, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with sharing about culture through sketching, is for me, the details are super important. People often remark about my sketches that, gosh, it's so detailed. I'm like, yeah, because that's for me is half the excitement, is that I want you to be able to look at a sketch of one of those homes in Turkey, or of my new home in Norway, or Chinatown in San Francisco, because I think the devil's in the details. Like, so much of a place comes out in the tiny little moments, whether it's a stalk of lavender hanging from a market vendor in Prague, or these little moments that just speak volumes. So for me, the pen is a way to get to observe those details. So I'm drawing the scene in, I'm putting in lots of details. And the other thing I do with a pen that you might have seen on some of the sketches is I'll often do little notes, like little annotations. And those for me, it could be a number of things. It could just be something very simple and sensory, like, the air is cool this morning. There's a procession walking by. I can hear the sound of bells, or the church bells are ringing in the hour. Like, I love to kind of to come back to the idea of being present and mindful in that moment. It's my way of acknowledging and honoring everything that's happening around me. And sometimes they do get a little bit more personal. I could say, oh, I've been in a terrible mood this morning, but I can feel it lifting, or feeling super alive right now. Like, I like to kind of put myself into the sketch that way. And I find that those sort of engage people that way too, that they can kind of put themselves in the scene through having my own personal experiences there. And the last stage is the super fun part, where I get to put the pen and pencil away and get my paints out and just bring the scene to life through color. I often just say, like, that stage is just meant to be fun. My brain can finally stop thinking and processing a new scene and just have fun painting and trying to capture the beautiful colors of a new place. So yeah, for me, those stages, you know, sketching it out in pencil, drawing it in pen, and then finishing it off with watercolor paint, really reflects the way that I'm observing a new scene. You know, at first you just kind of take this overview, kind of take it all in, you zoom in, you get some more details, and then finally you just get to have fun there. You get to enjoy this new place. So I really loved how my sketching process has come to mirror my own process in understanding a new place.
Wow. A couple more, we'll get you out of here, I promise.
No way.
You've been to 50 countries, and you have this amazing quote where you say, "Sitting still is a way of falling in love with the world and everything in it," that's on your website. How hard is it to sit still, and are you still seeking like you were a couple years ago when you tried this travel bug, this travel drug out for the first time and you couldn't get enough of it?
Yeah, I love both of those questions. I think that sitting still was incredibly hard at first. It was very uncomfortable because, like I said, with the whole reason my name of my blog is The Great Affair is to Move, and I had fallen in love with movement, and I had created a life for myself in which I could move. I knew how to move after taking that first leap. And so sitting still just wasn't, it was totally contrary to that. You know, I had built a life where I was able to move through the world. And how do you suddenly bring that to like shift gears? It's very hard at first. And I think that there, you can really get comfortable with moving from different, from place to place. And that becomes a comfort zone of its own because you know how it works. You have that newness and that discovery that kind of comes with every day. And so saying goodbye to that, it's like leaving a, you know, this thing that was very uncomfortable for me at first became my comfort zone. And so leaving that was its own process of having to leave a comfort zone, was just as difficult as taking that first initial leap. What I'll say is that it has since become very innate. I love to sit still now. Several years after having first tried to sit still, it's now a huge part of the way I spend my life. Like I'm here in Norway, but I am not moving. I literally staying on the same little set of islands the whole time I'm here. Because for me, I'm now seeking in a different way. I'm not seeking physically through movement. I'm seeking to be on a journey creatively. I want to write books and I want to bring out these stories that are more in depth and to journey that way mentally and emotionally. It doesn't always go hand in hand with physical movement. You know, when you're constantly on the move and on the road, it can be very difficult for your mind to have the space it needs in which to process and understand these creative projects you're engaged in. So I'm absolutely just as hungry and just as seeking as I was when I started out 8 years ago. But I would say I'm seeking in a different way now. The road that I'm walking is an invisible one, but I'm still trying to get down it.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, so I'm going to hit you with a couple questions, all right? And you got to go instant thought. And I know okay. You get asked this one all the time as a traveler, right? People ask, what's the greatest place you've ever been to, right? That happens all the time. But I want to know, and this is a question from your fellow UVA alum. Also, I feel like I'm just plugging this podcast the whole time, but Brett Hughes was on this. And his favorite question is, tell me about your best day traveling. What's the best day that pops in your mind? What's that look like?
Oh, that is the best question. I've never been asked that. And there's a few, oh gosh, this is a hard one. But I'm going to say, oh, I don't want to overthink this. I would say, one of my best days was on that trip to Turkey that I mentioned earlier. I was thinking if there was a moment when I was sketching, that was my best day. But no, probably one of the best was in Turkey when it was my second to last day of doing that trek. And it was a really hard day. The way I described it in my notes that day was I was the most lost I had been on the whole trip and was like crying in the woods and it was super difficult. And then I emerged from the woods and there was this adorable little house in the middle of nowhere with smoke curling out of its chimney. And there was a family there and they welcomed me in. And it was a one room house. It didn't have electricity or running water. They lit it with a little kerosene lamp. It felt like I was back in time. We were just sitting there on the floor eating dinner. And it was just having been so lost and having been so incredibly found by this family, that really is what has kept me going out in the world. So I would say, best day is just kind of seeing myself on that journey, both physically and emotionally.
How were you lost? Like, how does that, I mean, the natural follow-up to that. What happened?
There was no map or waymarked route. And so I had a guidebook with directions and I had a compass, but I often lost my way. I was very physically lost in terms of just not having a path to follow.
I love this. What, in your eyes, does it mean to be human?
To connect. I think we're here to connect with each other because, like we said earlier, with living with an open heart, so often our natural instinct can be to put our headphones in and to be on our phone and to close ourselves off and to not take the time to really get to know another human being. But I think that we're also made for that, and that when we do, it's a really beautiful experience, and that it leaves us forever changed. So I do think we're here to connect with each other.
How do you feel about politics?
I hate them. With a passion.
Beautiful. I won't ask you who you're going to vote for. How do you feel about reading?
Love it. Do it as much as I can. Couldn't dream of a life without books.
What are you reading right now?
I am reading a book by Rebecca Solnit called The Faraway Nearby.
I like that. That'll be on the list.
Yeah.
How do you feel about marriage? How do you feel about marriage?
I think it's beautiful, and I hope to have it one day. Absolutely.
How about
I think,
divorce?
Again, I'll just quickly say about marriage, I think it, to come back to the point on connection, I think it's a beautiful example of the ultimate connection you can have with another person. And divorce, I think, is necessary at times. It saddens me, and I think because it is such a opposite example of connection when you're not able to find that common ground anymore. But I do know that it's absolutely necessary at times.
If you were to describe your flame right now, and the analogy we've used on this show is that we all have one, and sometimes it burns very low and we need a new log. We need to stoke it. We need to turn that, you know, turn the ashes upside down. If you were to describe your flame as you're exploring and sharing and creating, what's it like right now?
It's a beautiful question. So I love to make fires. Nothing makes me happier than a little wood burning stove. And there's this point you get to, like, there's nothing more difficult when a fire won't start. You've got your kindling and your paper and your starter logs. You're like, what is going on here? But sometimes you get to this point where it's just going, it's going well, and you just can kind of keep feeding a log in there, and it's a nice steady burn. This whole trip to Norway for me was a chance to reconnect with my flame creatively and to get involved in a deep creative project. I'm writing about my time in India right now, and I hope that it'll be a book one day. And I get to live every day. I get to live my best day every day, in that I just get to wake up and immediately dive into this book and just put another log on the fire and just keep that going. So I would say there were some moments in the last year where it felt like I was just in that frustrating moment of trying to get the fire started or to keep it going. But right now it's burning pretty steadily, which I'm super grateful for.
And how do you feel about the word limits?
Don't need them. Get rid of them.
I like it. I like it. So how can we see your work? You know, what can we do to continue to encourage you to share your stories? I mean, like you referenced, it's not as though you're a billionaire and you're just funding these trips off of somebody else's dime. You know, you're creating content and sharing it. It's giving these other experiences. How can us as encouragers help that?
Oh, thank you for that. Well, I love my website. I consider it my virtual home in the world. I love spending time on it and just putting stories together to share there. So I welcome people to come and say hi. As you mentioned, my full name, CandiceRoseRiordan.com. I'm also a huge fan of Instagram. I love to share sketches and also sketches in process there. So I love it when people come and say hi there as well. And my Instagram handle is just at CandiceRiordan. There's no Rose in that one. So those are my two favorite ways to connect with people. I do have a Facebook and Twitter page as well, but Instagram for sure is a very comfortable way to stay in touch with people because it's so visual and it just lends itself to sharing sketches so easily.
Yeah, well, we are all over that, all those links that we posted for sure. And Candace, this is awesome. I mean, literally, this came about off of somebody sending me a note, and you're extremely gracious and clearly inspiring to everybody and myself included.
Well, I love that. I'm, as I mentioned, with several of the ways that I got started, I'm a huge fan of serendipity and the way things happen that we couldn't have imagined. So I'm so grateful to your friend for sending you a link to my story and for reaching out to me. So thank you so much.
All right. Well, enjoy Norway, and we'll be following you along the entire journey. And when you get back, let us know. I'm in San Francisco all the time. I'd love to grab you a cup of coffee.
Awesome.
Awesome.
That sounds
great.
Thanks so much, Yogi.
All right. Good morning. Have a great day in Norway. And it's midnight here in Southern California, so we're going to shut it down. But thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
All right. Cool. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Later. All right, how about that? That was awesome, man. She was fascinating, right? I mean, talk about going for it. You know, $4,000 and just away she went. So many really cool takeaways from that. That I'm sure your minds were going, and if you were driving, maybe you pulled over and took some notes. For me, it is such a small world. You know, her first sketch was in Porto, Portugal, and for those of you that had a chance to watch Life in a Walk. With my dad, our documentary, that's where it started. And as you know, is that film and that experience completely changed my life. Learning about him and going on that walk and creating that film was just an epic experience. So to hear the little things along the way, I felt like she was kind of a part of my dad, dropping all of that knowledge. But I always like to make sure that we end this with the challenge. And there are so many great nuggets about, you know, what are we seeking? You know, she said that a quote that her mom tells her is good wears many disguises. And I think sometimes our life can get cloudy. You know, it can, the greatness, the joy, the simple joys, the competing to stay present and remain present can get cloudy, and it can wear a different hat. It can be disguised. And sometimes it's hard to see, you know, that ray of sunshine. And look, I'm not trying to be rose-colored glasses here. I'm just saying that I do think that it's a choice if we want to set limits on ourselves or not. And we all want to live a life where we're charging and we're going and we're expressing. Some of us express in completely different ways. Kobe Bryant dropped 60 points in his last game. That's how he expressed himself. You know, Candace clearly expressed herself through art and through words. I express myself through my voice a lot of times, or my actions. So the challenge is this: how do you express yourself? You know, really do the work on it. What is disguised right now that could be good? Are you seeing it through the proper lens? And lastly, of course, her blog is called The Great Affair. What I loved what she said about that is that, you know, we all should have an affair with something that we love to connect with. Doesn't necessarily have to be a person. It could be. It could be a hobby. It could be a book. It could be a journal. But what's your affair? And if you don't have one, stop for a minute, man. Stop and pull over. Do the work. Do some lonely work. Ask yourself what you're into. Write down 50 things that you want to do in life and see if you've checked any of them off, or start to check some of them off. And as always, take a run at it. We only get to do it once, so we might as well do it as well as hard, with as much fun and joy as humanly possible. So once again, I thank you. This podcast has literally been magical in my life. It's about 12:15 in the morning here, and it was so cool to talk to her in Norway. It was our first international podcast. So thank you for the time. Thank you for the love. Feel free to share it. Tell your friends. Leave a comment. Thank you to Blog Talk Radio and iTunes for continually pushing this thing. And for all the episodes, you can check them out at yogiroth.com. And lastly, as always, remember, the only limits that we set in life are the ones we set ourselves. Lots of love. Peace.